Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Andy Troy Show, where you can sample all the great things New York has to offer. For the next 60 minutes, I'll not only clue you into some great things to do around town, but we'll also chat with some interesting local personalities. Tonight's show is about public relations, with my guests Judah Engelmeyer and Les Schechter. But first, our shameless plugs. For those of you who haven't read my anti-aging book, Living Young, 32 Habits of Ageless People, there's no time like the present. It's always the right time to stay young and get healthy. Also, if you're going to live a long time, you might as well enjoy it. So check out my DVD, The Bedroom Workout for Men, on how to improve men's sexual performance through exercise. Both are available on Amazon.com and my website, AndyTroy.com. Remember that if you bring my book to any of my events, I'll be happy to autograph it for you. Speaking of which, our next event will be my 10th annual birthday bash. This Friday night, May 11th, from 6 to 10 p.m., and will feature our alternative belly dance show, where well-known dancers perform to non-traditional music. If you've never seen a woman belly dance to Welcome to the Jungle or Enter Sandman, this is your chance. I'm sorry. The location will be Taj, 48 West 21st Street, between 5th and 6th Avenue. There'll be drink specials and lots of other surprises. It'll be a great night, so come join us. The details for this and all my monthly events are on my website, TastingNYC.com. The Andy Troy Show has a fan page on Facebook that contains links to past shows as well as pictures of all our past guests. Check it out by punching The Andy Troy Show into your Facebook browser. If you haven't heard my animal rescue song, Hoping for Another Morning, you can both hear the song and see the video by going to YouTube and punching Hoping for Another Morning into the browser. My good friend and producer John Anello, a.k.a. Johnny Mandolin, has a CD called La Voce Mia. Order your copy today at johnnymandolin.com or call E. Rossi at 212-226-9254 and they'll hook you up. If you haven't heard my animal rescue song, Hoping for Another Morning, you can both hear the song and see the video by going to YouTube and punching Hoping for Another Morning into the browser. Finally, sponsors, we want them. If you'd like to promote your goods and or services to our vast listening audience, contact the station or me directly at andyftroy@aol.com. Okay, it's kind of interesting how I got the idea for the show this week. We have my old friend, Les Schechter, here, who has ferreted many interesting guests to me. Say hello to the people, Les.
Hello, Andy, and hello all of you people out there listening to this program.
Well, Fred hooked me up with, Les hooked me up with Fred Weintraub about a month ago. He was a fascinating guy. And I've got a couple of guests coming up in June that he connected me with. But we were talking the other day, and I said, you know, I'm interested in doing a show on PR. You're a PR guy. So why not make a show out of that? Made a few calls, and Judah came my way. Judah, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
All right. Now, this is a show that actually interests me myself because I'm a promotional guy. I might as well talk to the real pros here. Now, how did you guys get involved in PR? Les, you probably did it a year or two before Judah, right?
A year or two, I think. I think so.
Stay close to the mic, Les. You have valuable information for us.
I got started basically in 1960, 59. That's how many years ago? It's a long time
ago. Is that in dog years or what?
It's a lifetime. I got a job as a copy boy on a major New York newspaper, the Daily Mirror. And I was there for a few years, got drafted into the Army, served a couple of years in the Army, came back out, and I was working again until 1963 when the paper went out of business. And after that, I got a job right away with Channel 2 News on the assignment desk. They were starting their own independent local units. Before that, they were part of the network. And actually, I worked on the midnight shift, and I was the first person on the first shift when they moved to 57th Street, where they are now, a former Borden's Milk Factory. And at they used to do the shows, the local shows, from the Gray Bar building in Grand Central.
You didn't need any meat in there, did you?
Huh?
I don't know if you're supposed to mix milk with meat, Les.
It's okay. Whatever.
Okay.
Whatever. But anyhow, at about a quarter to midnight on a Friday, they carted us all off to the west side, and I got behind the desk, and the engineers got behind their thing, and at midnight they switched, and they're still there at 524 West 57th. It's a long year. I don't think you want my whole history.
We do. We want to know everything.
For about a year, I actually worked for Channel 2 News, CBS, and for ABC News Network. And I knew there was something not right about that. Until finally, they came across together, and I had to make a choice. So I went to ABC News in publicity. And that's how I got involved in publicity.
Okay, now, Judy, you got involved in this a couple of years later, right?
Just a little bit. I actually got lucked out. I graduated Queens College with a degree in English. Didn't know what to do with that. I decided to volunteer for my local assemblyman at the time, who was Sheldon Silver, the Ways and Means chairman.
Sheldon, I know
Sheldon Silver.
Know him too.
Now he's the Speaker of the Assembly. So I decided to do constituent stuff for him. I did writing, I did correspondence, and I went to a lot of local events and represented him. After about 6 weeks of doing that, one of my resumes finally came through. I ended up getting a job at the Anti-Defamation League back in 1991. Fell into it right around the time of the Crown Heights riots. So I was thrown in automatically. I was working for the New York Regional Office, and my very first job was to help work with the police bias unit, the African American community, and the Jewish community to try to bring them together, try to find out where things went wrong, where they can go right, and didn't know anything, and I was sitting in the police department. I was working with the bias unit, working in the mayor's office. And before you knew it, I knew enough to, with a year later, a man named Carl McCall was appointed to become the New York State Comptroller to fill the vacancy of Ned Regan, who had resigned. I got a phone call saying, do you want to work for him to help him get reelected? You have, you know, possibly 1.5 years to work, or maybe, you know, indefinitely if he makes it. So I said, you know what, it's a nice opportunity too. So I ended up working for Carl McCall for a year and a half, statewide elected official. After we won that election, I stayed on until 2000. Ended up working through two elections, the first African-American elected statewide. And then I got itchy again, so it's time to leave. So looking to leave, and Howard Rubenstein recruited me. It's my very first public relations job at a firm was Howard Rubenstein. With that.
How does working with politicians sound different than what is it as compared to working with your traditional company? I guess more damage control in a sense, right?
It's damage control in a sense, but it's also a lot of public positioning on a regular basis, always making them look good, always taking their positions that they take and trying to spin it to make it positive so that you like them and you like them and you like them, so that you want to vote for them again and that you don't criticize them so much in the public. So it's actually an entree. It's a great way of learning the business because it's fast learning. You don't have a lot of you don't have a large learning curve and not a lot of room for mistakes, as one mistake can be fatal.
True. Well, yeah. Tell us something from your many years of experience.
Let me just interject something.
Sure.
You mentioned Carl McCall and Sheldon Silver.
I did. Yes.
It turns out I've worked with both of them. Carl McCall, before he went to work, he was the head of Channel 13.
Yes.
And I did a lot of publicity for Channel 13 for a number of years and for PBS as a whole. And I found he was a very interesting, smart man. And then, of course, Sheldon Silver, I first met when I did the publicity for the Lower East Side Festival.
Ah.
Which is originally the Jewish festival,
right,
which Shelley Silver started.
Right.
It was one of the perks that he got.
Yes, yes.
Because he lives on
Grand
Street.
Yeah.
And he told me once, he pointed out that when he was a kid, he had relatives who owned Silver's hardware stores.
Okay.
There were like four or five in the city. And the one down on Essex Street he used to work at after school. And, you know, he's still a very supportive of the area. But I don't know if you know this, but he's also a big hockey fan.
I did not know that.
Yes, big hockey fan, and loves the Islanders and the Rangers. And I brought some hockey players down when I was doing the Lower East Side Festival, and football players as well, and he was thrilled by that. But he insisted on taking all of them to his favorite kosher deli on Essex Street.
On Essex Street, which was Shmuelke Bernstein's at the time. So.
Is this a Jewish show tonight or what?
It can be, yes.
Yeah. And he's a powerful man in the state.
He's now the Shelley Soldier. He's the longest running speaker of the New York State Assembly, right. and I learned a few things from him as well.
I'm sure you did. Now, he knows his politics.
So you've been doing this for a long time, Liz.
Yeah.
How has the business changed? Obviously, social media, but what else is different?
Well, it changed a lot. When I first started, there were a lot of daily newspapers around, and all of them had columnists, you know, entertainment columnists, gossip, whatever you want to call them. Ed Sullivan for the Daily News, Earl Wilson, who I knew very well for the New York Post, you know, a bunch of them, and they were different. They weren't interested in scandal. They really weren't. They really liked the celebrities of the time, and they wouldn't print anything that was negative in those days. They really wouldn't. I have since become good friends with Earl Wilson Jr., his son, who wrote the show "Let My People Come," which was an all-nude show. And Earl Sr. was embarrassed by it. But his wife, Earl Jr.'s mother, supportive of her son, invested $5,000, and she made a $25,000 profit.
Very nice.
Because of that. And this was 80 years, you know, in the 80s. But it changed a lot. You know, today it's all the Inquirer, you know,
sensationalism.
All of these things.
Sensationalism.
Everybody, you know, it's hard for me to watch television and those kind of shows. You know, they print anything without ever checking anything. So don't you find that?
Well, what I find is, first of all, when I started, media was a lot more vibrant than it is today. There were newsrooms had people working for them. Thanks to the economy and a lot of cutbacks, you have a reporter who used to cover religion is now covering everything and doesn't have enough time for the traditional beat anymore. So you no longer have a plethora of people to pitch your story to. You no longer have people to really take interest in what it is you're talking about or writing about or sending them a pitch about. And it's luck of the draw for the most part. It's relationship driven at this point. If you don't know the person well, you're going to have a hard time getting in the door. You were telling me that people come to you to put people on your show. If you don't have a relationship with them, it's harder to get your attention. And that's just how it is. It used to be in the past, a religion reporter would cover some good religion story. A business reporter covers some business story. But now they're all the same. They overlap in so many different ways. They don't have enough expertise in anything. So if it doesn't sound exciting in the email or on the phone, you're not going to look any further, and you're not going to be able to make it. It's been very difficult.
Now, what's the difference between trying to make someone on the way up, put them on the map, and trying to rehab the image of a company that's taken a hit? Like, what percentage of the time would you say you guys do each, and how's the approach different?
Well, when you're dealing with celebrities or personal publicity, I remember some years ago, Ron Darling approached me when he was a pitcher for the Mets, and he was married to a very beautiful lady who was a model who wanted to be an actress. And I had a long meeting with her, and I was really very honest with her. Her relationship to Ron Darling was a column item, period. Until she did something or got some sort of a job in the industry, it would be very difficult to publish, and I turned it down. And she never did make it anywhere. But the point is, it's all different. Today, they don't care. They want to be in the Inquirer. They want to be on TMZ. They want to be on
No publicity ET. Is bad publicity. Huh?
Yeah, well, that's not true.
That's completely not true. A lot of people think. Yeah, okay, tell us about that, because I know a lot of people who feel that way.
Well, I'll tell you. Today, unlike in the glory days of PR when it first started, you have the Internet today, which means that any bit of bad news you get stays around forever. So when you have the saying that all good news is, you know, all news is good news, it's because the public forgets. The public has short memories. Today, you could have the shortest memory. All you do is do a Google search, and I can find it again. So if you did something wrong, it's going to haunt you forever. So the important thing today is to actually watch everything you do, from your personal life to your public life, because everything's going to get out there. And if you're getting trouble, a big thing today is search engine optimization, SEO, which is part of public relations these days, which is trying to make the bad stuff show up on page 20 and the good stuff show up on page 1. It's a whole new ball game.
All right, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little more social media, because that's obviously a lot of what you guys do these days, and probably not a lot of that going on in your day. Hold up. We'll be back.
Yo, this is Fat Alder Cannoli over here, and you are listening to the Chintani Broadcasting Network, high definition digital radio broadcasting to the world.
Hello, my name is Anthony Teresa, owner and producer of Blue Night Recording Studio in beautiful Orange County, California, just outside Los Angeles. As a guitarist, vocalist, bassist, session player, producer, and engineer, I have either played or recorded on over 400 CD projects. Let me tell you, it's not easy to record your own music. My goal is to help you to be the best you can be behind the mic and in the tracking room. We'll get the best possible sounds from your voice and instruments. Do you need musicians? I've got them. The top session players in Southern California and Los Angeles. Let's make your recording project a reality. You can contact me by phone at 949-338-0293. That's 949-338-0293. Or contact me an email at catduo@earthlink.net. Looking forward to hearing from you. Take care and have a great week.
Hey, Mia, Frankie,
hey, John,
where are we?
We're at Umberto's Lamb House.
Umberto's.
132 Mulberry Street.
It's the place to be. What are you kidding?
Little Italy.
Hey, are we having fun? Is the food good?
Oh, my God. The gnocchi, the marinara, the mozzarella.
I ate three times tonight. I can't. So much.
Well, Chintani Broadcasting loves Umberto's at 132 Mulberry Street. In fact, that's why we broadcast from here. When you're in Little Italy, come down and watch a live broadcast. Or tune in, and anytime you're around, come and eat. Tutta mangiamo, si!
Tutta mangiamo, hey!
Mangia!
Umberto's Clam.
I knew Howard Rubenstein's father.
Okay, we're back. And better than ever. Okay, so we've kind of got the new sort of a PR. How long have you been involved in this, Jude?
I've been doing public relations work for now 21 years.
That's not really new. Okay, newer than Les, who's been like, what, 50,
right.
50 years, I guess?
That's close.
You know, when you say it's not new, but when I started, I had a hairline.
Did you? Well, now you've got a line for everything, I guess, basically.
But I'm pumped, yes.
Okay. Now,
can I just mention one thing?
You can chime in.
Judah mentioned the fact that he was, what, worked for Howard Rubenstein. Now, Howard Rubenstein has one of the most important, largest public relations agencies based in New York. You know, he represents a lot of major power brokers in New York. He did George Steinbrenner when he was alive. He does Donald Trump. He handles a lot of things. And they do a very good job. Now, I remember, going back to when I first started, one of my first assignments with the Daily Mirror, they shipped me to police headquarters, to cover police headquarters. And in those days, you learned from the other reporters that were there. And the New York Post had an old-time reporter there who had covered the police headquarters for maybe 25 years at the time. His name was Arthur Rubenstein. And Arthur was born in the Bronx, but you would never know that listening to him speak, because he spoke like he was born in England.
Very austere.
And young Howard would come in every once in a while, and he would work with his father, you know, kind of thing. But it was very interesting, and he knew a lot. I mean, and Arthur was a very outgoing man who took all the young reporters under his wing, no matter who they worked for. That's the way it worked in those days. You went out, you covered it together. There wasn't what it is now. In fact, on Baxter Street, which is only one block from here, right, police headquarters used to be there. It's this grand old building, which was now a very expensive condominium building. And all the newspapers shared apartments in the buildings across the street. Right? Yes. Yeah.
What's going on? Is Betty sharing information?
Baxter Street.
Market Street.
Betty is our tour guide in Little Italy.
Baxter Street. Believe me. Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're right. Right. And there used to be...
Betty, our engineer, is correcting Les on his information in the neighborhood.
Well, it's a continuation of Baxter. But anyhow, there used to also be a lot of police stores down below that sold guns and ammunition. I mean, there must have been three on that block. But anyhow, this is the way you learn how to do things then.
I go to that neighborhood to get loaded myself, by the way.
Yes, but I'm fine. You have a line for everything, too.
I do. I'm out of line sometimes, too, by the way.
Just give me a call.
Okay. Then you can rehab my image, possibly. Okay, I'm setting myself up for Judah and Les to fight over me to fix me up.
We'll get you done.
You mentioned fix your image. You asked the question before, the difference between rehabbing someone's image and doing public relations from scratch.
Yes.
When you're doing public relations from scratch for a company, for somebody, you have a plethora of ideas to work with and a bunch of different directions you can go in and try. When you're rehabbing someone's image, someone's already been out there, you have to be very careful how you approach it. Because people already know them, they have an expectation, and that way you're limited with your window, and you have to work with what people know and try to improve. It's a bit more challenging.
Okay, good.
That's crisis communications.
All right. Well, we've got Les, who's been around for 50-something years. We've got Judah, who's just a babe in the industry at 20 years.
Absolutely.
We also have a new friend of mine who I brought down tonight, who came to my party this past Saturday at 235th. And her name is Priya, and she's possibly going to be interning with us. So I thought I would introduce her. Would you care to say something to the people of the world, Priya?
Hello, people of the world.
That's excellent. I can see already that you have a bright future in this field. So, what is it that you're actually kind of in the financial field, ideally, right?
I'm currently working in the financial department at a medical practice in Queens.
Okay. Have you rehabbed any medical practices images, Judah?
I do work for a few medical practices right now, medical practices and medical centers.
Les is like raising a finger. Who's killed someone and what did you do for them, Les?
No, I'm actually doing some work now for New York City's only Medicare ACO, which is they announced on April 1st, they identified 27 community care organizations in the United States to be an official ACO for Medicare. And there's only 5 in New York State and only 1 in New York City, and it's in Chinatown. They represent a very underserved population, the Chinese population, many of whom are immigrants.
I've been served by them many times, actually.
And they have, they're headquartered on Mott Street. They have medical offices in Brooklyn and in Queens. And they have 200 or more physicians who service 12,000 patients.
Okay. Well, now, I may be mentoring Preeta here somewhat, but did you guys have mentors? Like Judah, who got you hooked up?
Who got me hooked up? Well, I have a few mentors. First, Shelley Silver was someone who taught me a lot. When I worked for Carl McCall, though, I think I learned a wealth of public relations, image development, image reclamation.
Did you have to learn a lot about image rehab?
I did, yes, yes. And part of being a politician, part of being an African American politician in New York, you're always under scrutiny. And one thing Carl was a master at was getting through everything, smelling and looking great. And I learned how to do from him. I learned from him how to talk, how to look, how to get up there and present yourself, and always never let him see you sweat, essentially.
So you were mentored by a politician, basically,
absolutely,
in your PR career.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Les, who got you hooked up?
I'll tell you, in my day, we didn't call a mentor We called
Babe Ruth, right?
We called them rabbis.
Ah, okay.
Everybody had a rabbi.
Who was Carl McCall's rabbi, Judah?
That can be anyone from Percy Sutton to Basil...
Rathbone.
Basil Patterson. Basil
right.
Patterson. You know, a whole plethora of the old-time Harlem politics.
Charles Wrangler.
Okay.
For sure.
So, yes, Les, yeah. Back to you.
Who was your mentor? We used to call them rabbis, some people who would help you, you know, for various reasons.
So these weren't real rabbis?
No.
Sheldon Silver was my rabbi for all intents and purposes. Yes. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have gotten my start in the whole industry.
And you didn't have to be Jewish to be a rabbi. Right. My rabbi was not Jewish. But I met, when I was at ABC News, the ABC News publicity department in those days was three people. Me, a secretary, and the head of the department at that time was a man named Frank Little. And he used to change jobs in the public relations industry every 2 or 3 years. He was one of those. He always could find a better job somewhere.
Moving on up, so.
Right, moving on up. Anyhow, the first thing that when I first joined them was that we covered together was Winston Churchill's funeral. And we did this from an office here on 66th Street on television, and we did a terrific job, and he was very impressed by that. Anyhow, about a year later, he left, right? And he went to the New York Philharmonic as the head of public relations of the New York Philharmonic. He knew nothing about orchestras, but that didn't stop him. And while he was there, he called me and he said, you know, Live from Lincoln Center was starting, and they were unhappy with the agency that had been hired by Exxon at the time, or Esso, I think it was, because and they weren't, for the first show, they didn't get much of an audience. So I went over and I interviewed with the people at Lincoln Center, and they hired my little company to do it. As it turned out, I replaced a very well-known public relations expert named Abe Schechter, who was one of the creators of the Today Show and did a lot of corporate public relations, but he didn't know how to do, or he wasn't very good at doing tune-in, you know, and getting people to watch the show. And they ended up working there for Lincoln Center for 12 years. I did all the Live from Lincoln Center, the first 52 shows after the initial one. And then during that time, Frank Little left, and he went to work for PBS in Washington and became the national head of public relations. And the next thing I know, he calls me, and he says, would you like to do some work for PBS? And I said, yes, and it was the first national fundraising campaign, Festival 74. And I did Festival 74 and 75, and I was associated with PBS for 30 years after that. I did Live from Lincoln Center, American Playhouse, Nature, a whole bunch of specials, including...
But you've also worked with people who make money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But they're not necessarily... Okay. Fun to work for. PBS was fun, but I did work for Miss Universe, Inc. for 10
years.
Now
that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
You have any guests for me, by the way?
Huh?
You have any guests for me? Former Miss Universe? Yeah.
There might be some around, actually.
Okay. Rita, you ever think of the Miss India contest for yourself?
The Miss India contest?
Yes.
No.
No? What do you guys think? Can we work on her image and get her possibly?
I think it would be unfair competition for everybody else.
Really? Shows he's good at public relations.
No.
The man's got a good rap. Okay, yes. Les has got
you're
a point.
You're Indian background?
Yeah.
Okay. The first Miss Universe pageant I did was in 1982 in Lima, Peru.
Uh-huh.
And Miss India that year, I knew nothing about these pageants, you know, but I learned fairly fast. But Miss India was a real operator. She was very attractive, like all of them. And she was an operator kind of thing.
Like
and
all Indians or all no, Miss Universe
no,
contestants?
No, I am not.
Because if you like Indian girl, Preeta
Indian.
Can hook you up.
No, no.
You want to meet an Indian girl, though.
Okay. But anyhow, she made it her business to get to know who's doing publicity.
Okay.
She was smart enough to do that. And one day, somebody that worked with me, we decided we were going to take a couple of hours off. And we were going to go shopping in Lima. And she heard about it. She came over. She said, oh, can I go with you? Can I go with you? So I said, I don't know. I have to get permission. So I went to the head of the pageant, and I said, we're just going to go. She had no rehearsal schedule. I said, we're going to go for 2 or 3 hours. So they gave me permission to take her. I was responsible for her. So she
to
comes
take her,
along.
That's an interesting choice of words.
We come along to this... to this souk. I don't know anything about negotiating. If I see something, I say,
here's
that's
the baby
what I
yours,
want, and they pay whatever they want.
Right.
So anyhow, so she's walking around, and she comes up, and there I made one little negotiation for some sort of tapestry, and he asked for whatever it was. He asked for a 2,000, you know, whatever it was. And I said, no. I said, I'll give you 1,500. She hears that. She says, no, 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 no. She comes over, and she says, no, 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 no. She looks at she and she spits on the floor. She goes,
so it's beautiful
garbage.
And classy, too. Okay.
No, this is garbage, she says. She says, 100. 100. Uh-huh. He's asking for 2,000. He goes, no, 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 no. She said, 100. No more. Not worth more. So I'm about to say something. She goes, shh. So he says, no. So he goes down to 1,800. She says, 110. And I really wanted this. I was ready to pay. It was hardly anything in dollars.
Right.
But no. So she haggled for about 10 minutes, and she got it down to 100.
Wow.
She got it down to 100, so I bought it. And she goes, you don't know anything. You don't know how to haggle.
So the art of negotiating. If you want something, you got to spit on the ground.
Well,
you know?
She later.
Wait a minute. I got the
wait
art. Is this an
is
Indian?
Is that really
thing?
An Indian custom?
Oh, I wait, don't know. I guess she was me.
Here's a story to the end of this.
I'm going to be careful about my carpets if I ever
wait. Comes at the end of the pageant. She doesn't finish as a finalist, but she's already working on me and the guy that's working me.
Uh-huh.
She wants to now come to New York.
Uh-huh.
And they want to send her back to India.
So you sponsor her.
They want to send her back. No, so I speak to the president of Miss Universe.
Sponsoring her, that's what they call it now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she had a sponsor.
Okay, then.
Waiting for in New York. So after a little negotiation, he lets me take her back to New York. And
he's
I'm
taking her again.
No. She's going to be met at the airport by somebody. Who did meet her, and anyhow, I transferred her over. I saw who it was. She, within the next year, she got a job in New York working for as a hatchet girl in an Indian restaurant on 58th Street.
Couldn't that be like turban check, basically?
Uh-huh. And 2-3 years later, I'm in California sitting in the Polo Lounge when she comes marching in with a very good-looking guy who looks very rich. And she introduces him, and he was very rich. And I said, boy, that's pretty good. She made it. And about a year later, there's a story in the New York Post that they arrested a spy ring, an international spy ring, and she was one of the people.
Look at that.
That they
Les is still under investigation.
So what's the lesson in that?
Right?
Don't buy a tapestry for
$100.
don't spit when you're in India, I think, is what we're going to say. Okay. Well, we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to hear why Judah's company is one of the 25 best companies in America to work for. And why the new movie, Dark Shadows, would not be in existence if not for the magic of Les Schechter. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Centanni Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital stereo.
Broadcasting to the world. Would you like to know what's going on in the Italian American community and stay in touch, even if you don't live in Little Italy? There's a way to do it. There's a great newspaper out called GIA, the Giornale Italo Americano. This newspaper is distributed nationally and comes out weekly, and you can subscribe by going to their website at www.giamondo.com, that's G-I-A-M-O-N-D-O.com, or call 718-592-2196. Check out GIA for all your information on what's happening in the Italian-American community. It's published in both Italian and English. It's a great way to read and follow up and practice your Italian as well. Check out GIA on the internet at www.giamondo.com. GIA newspaper, the Italian-American newspaper for today.
Hi, this is Robbie Russell from the Garage Mania Show. 60s, 70s garage psych and punk you can't hear anywhere else. Mixed in with a lot of fun.
This is Nurse Cheryl. Listen to the Garage Mania Show on the Shitani Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital audio broadcasting to the world.
Okay, we're back. A couple of interesting points we need to touch on. First of all, Les, you are responsible for the death of Jonathan Frid, is that correct? No, not really, but you are the reason why Dark Shadows is about to make its launch as a new film on this Friday, right?
Well, I was working at ABC at the time. I had transferred from the news department to the entertainment department, and they introduced a new soap opera called Dark Shadows. A gothic soap opera, and it was actually supposed to be a showcase for a Hollywood star, Joan Bennett, who she came from a very, very royal acting family, the Bennett family. Her father, Richard Bennett, was a major actor, and then she had two sisters, Constance Bennett, who also had a career, and Barbara Bennett. And Barbara Bennett was married to Morton Downey Sr.
Who he was an Irish tenor, I believe.
He was a leading Irish tenor in the 40s and 50s.
Did he end up being very proud of his son's work?
No.
No.
Morton Downey Sr. was a partner of Joseph Kennedy, and they both became multimillionaires many years earlier when they invested in Pepsi Cola, and they became the biggest investors then. Anyhow, they started this thing. It was going to be a showcase for Joan Bennett. The series was on for probably 3-4 months, and nobody was watching. And they finally decided that they had to add a new character. So they hired this actor who was a graduate of the Yale Drama School, a Canadian named Jonathan Frid, and they were going to use him for 2 weeks. And they introduced this character, Barnabas Collins, who is a vampire, you know, who's raised up from the ground and anyhow, it became,
you need one of those in any show, basically.
Right. It became he became an instant sensation, and they immediately realized that, and they started to rewrite the series. They signed him to a long-term contract, and he became the star of that series. But the interesting thing was he graduated in the same class from Yale as Dick Cavett. They both graduated from the Yale Drama School.
Are you saying that Dick Cavett is a vampire as well?
No. But Dick Cavett actually put him on his talk show several times, and all of that helped. But what really made it is that we set up a tour where I would travel with Jonathan Frid to various markets where they had ABC stations. And after the first one, it really wasn't exciting. I came up with the idea that actually he should travel with fangs. Before we would land, he would put the fangs in his mouth and put the cape on and get off the plane, and there would be all the media there. But also, we would then put out the quick word that he lost his fangs. And we would plant the fangs.
I would think that is bad publicity for a vampire, no?
No. Well, we would plant the fangs somewhere in the airport. And you'd be surprised. I mean, they would catch them. We used to send them in advance to a station, and they would arrange to hide it somewhere.
Now, but how do you sign a vampire as a client? Do you buy a mistake or what?
Now he actually became a good friend of mine. We did a lot of work together.
Yeah, he just passed away recently.
He just passed away about 3-4 weeks ago. Yeah.
Rita, did you are you excited about the release of Dark Shadows? I'll take that as a no.
Well, I'm not.
No, well, she's not.
You're not a Johnny Depp fan?
I'm not. I'm sorry. I'm like the one person in the world who doesn't like it.
Well, they did use some of the actors, including Jonathan Frid, in this movie, and Kathryn Lee Scott, and a couple of others. They have minor parts in this film. It comes out on Friday, I believe.
Now, actually, Judah.
Yes, sir.
You work for a company that is considered one of the 25 best companies to work for in the U.S. Now, what is it like at
5W Public Relations?
Yes.
Well, you know, it was started in 2003 by a guy named Ron Tarosian, who is a ADD type guy who knows PR, and he understands how to draw clients and how to keep on working and working and working until he gets what he needs. He's built that company in the past 10 years to be a fairly decent sized firm with about 90 people with premier clients, all from by tenacity, by not saying no. We get reporters pushing back on us all the time saying, stop spamming us, stop talking to us, stop calling us, we don't want your clients. You talk to them enough, eventually they just relent and just take them. And that's kind of the art of PR. You got to be pushy and in a respectful way, not disrespectful. And 5W has it's known for having a younger staff, with people who understand social media and how to intertwine that with what you need today. Also understands all the new venues out there today, from the entertainment, whether it's an internet entertainment magazine to all the vertical magazines out there that appeal to fashion, to shoes, to housing, to build it yourself, do it yourself, to the reality shows. And our staff is so keyed into this, I'm not even as keyed in as much as they are, to a degree, to every single bit of media out there. They know where to tap into. So traditionally, you want to go to the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and places like that. There are thousands of places you can go to. And when you have a staff like ours who is just in tune to what everyone's listening to today, everyone's watching and reading, we know where to go to get what you need for your client, because you don't always need the New York Times. Sometimes you want to see yourself in the New York Times, but that might not drive your clientele or drive your business. So we find those places that are going to drive it and push until we get it.
Now, give me an example of what you would do with someone. Like, let's take a schmuck like me, for example. Let's say I hired your firm.
Well, you're not a schmuck. You seem like a nice guy.
See? Good. PR, good. All right, so let's say you take
And that's a Jewish word, you know, right?
Is it?
Yes.
PR?
Schmuck.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. I knew that. Anyway, so let's say I came to you and I said, I do all this junk I do, and I'm looking for my junk to be more popular. What would you do for me?
Well, the first thing we do is we figure out who you appeal to. Who's the base that you appeal to?
Now, this is going to be challenging.
Well, let me hear from you.
Oh, who do I appeal to? I know it's not Betty. Well,
you know what? Then we find what Betty likes, and we mold you to make that work.
You're going to have a hell of a job, based on the look on Betty's face at this present time. Okay. Who do I appeal to?
You know what? You do parties. You do parties.
I do.
Okay. So you go to the who's part of the club crowd? It's older teens all the way to their 20s, young 30s.
Yeah, I'd say mine is really more like 30s and mid 20s to 40.
And what do the people do for a living? What kind of professionals?
Local professionals.
Are they lawyers? Are they accountants? Are they financiers? Are they everything? Are they?
It's a mix of those.
So you figure out who your target demographic is. Then you look for those publications and that media and the venues that they read that attract to them. Whether it's an Entertainment Tonight, whether it's a fashion magazine, whether it's those TV shows, who's the next fashion star now. You find those venues, and then you put you out there we put you out as an expert on the topics that they care about, as someone who's interesting, someone who has something to say about their particular industry, and it has to be a little different. It's not humdrum. You can't be repeating the same lines everyone else says. You got to find something unique about it. But we put you in those areas with the appeal to the audience that you're targeting.
Right, like my radio show, I do a lot of classic rock people from the 60s and 70s, people for old
people
like me.
You know, Harry Chapin had a song, WOLD, and that's me.
I had his brother. I had his brother on the
Tom
show,
Chapin,
Tom Chapin,
right?
Yeah.
Wait, Les hired.
Oh, Les just hired me.
Les hired you as his PR
no,
guy.
No.
Les hired me
for you.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I can leave Les. I'm under an ironclad contract.
No. He's
You know, I want to just tell you, you do classic rock. You have a whole world of people that would follow you, whether or not it's people my age or a little bit older, or it's also my children. Because of the stuff I listen to, it's the stuff they listen to. So you find new demographics and you appeal to them as well. You got to mix in a little bit of the old and something they like as well, the new stuff, the Maroon 5, the guy who's on The Voice now, very, very popular, and he could border on classic rock with some of the stuff he does. And you sort of intertwine your interviews with someone young, someone old, someone young, someone old, and you bring the appeal back to them.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to a commercial break, but I want to hear more when we come back what you guys actually do. Like, what do PR people actually do for a client, and what does this stuff cost?
We talk. We do a lot of talking.
Okay. Talk is cheap. In this case, talk is not cheap.
Talk's pretty
actually,
expensive,
yeah.
Let me
okay,
tell you.
Okay, we'll be back.
Hi, this is Robbie Russell from the Garage Mania Show.
This is Nurse Cheryl.
Listen to Garage Mania Radio on the
Shetani Broadcasting Network.
High definition digital audio. Broadcasting
to the world!
If you love jazz, check out These Things We Dig, a new CD by jazz sax, flute, and clarinet recording artist James Aldean on Sexton Records. James Aldean has recorded 7 CDs for Sexton Records and appears regularly in the New York metropolitan area, including the great venue, the Whiskey Cafe. These Things We Dig features some of the best jazz and bebop styles, with James fronting the band, complemented by such great players as Mike Ponella, Phil Jones, Bob DeBenedette, Ron Naspo, and Wayne Dunton. You can get this new CD from Sexton Records by going to www.sexton.com. That's C-E-X-T-O-N.com. You can find out more about James Aldean at www.jldeanorchestra.com. For the best in jazz is Sexton Records, the audiophile jazz record label. Sexton.com.
Hi, this is James C. Napadano on Shentani Broadcasting. Please listen to the Jackpot Show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you will hear comedy, music, and conversation for intelligent people only. Once again, it's the Jackpot Show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Shentani Broadcasting.
Okay, we're back. So, Judah, I understand you were involved in something called advocacy PR.
Yes.
What is that?
Advocacy PR is something where you're not selling a product, you're not selling a person, you're selling an issue. And it can be for a non-for-profit, it could be for a politician trying to promote certain legislation. The most recent thing I'm doing right now is actually a very interesting case that more people should know about. There's an American citizen named Jacob Ostreicher. He's sitting in a Bolivian prison now for 10 months, uncharged. Not charged with no crime. The Bolivian government accused him of money laundering, yet after 25 different hearings, they haven't found any evidence, they haven't lodged any evidence, and they haven't filed a single charge. They're just holding him in Palamosa prison, which is one of the worst prisons in the country. If you ever saw the TV show Prison Break, that was the prison they portrayed in Bolivia. That was where people were getting shafted, they were getting shanked all the time, they were getting killed. It's a bad place. So you have this guy now sitting there for 10 months without being charged. The Bolivian government has tucked him away. In the meantime, he owned land and he planted rice in Bolivia, which is a very important crop. They've taken his land, they've sold all the rice for themselves, and he has not been charged. The State Department can't do a thing about it. They have no real relation with Bolivia. And the general public didn't even know about it. So what we just did finally, after about 10 months, the family came to us and said, what could you do? We held a press conference in front of the Bolivian mission with 500 of his friends and neighborhood supporters. And we had Fox come out, Eyewitness News, and not 2020, Nightline is doing a story this coming Thursday on Jacob's plight in the Bolivian prison. CNN is doing a story on his plight in the Bolivian prison. And the reason this is exciting for him is because it's something that matters. I'm not trying to sell a trinket, not trying to sell the newest, fanciest car. You're trying to actually help somebody. So, yeah, we're getting paid for a campaign. But on the other hand, what we're doing is we're bringing attention to an issue for somebody's life, essentially. An American citizen rotting in a jail without being charged in a country that has no relations with the United States.
You actually seem to have some social conscience, Jude. I know you were working with the American Jewish Congress, right? And you were credited with rehabbing their image?
Well, you know, the tough thing about that sentence, rehabbing their image, is that we were doing a really good job of it until the Bernie Madoff scandal. Then they lost all their money, and then nothing we did matter at that point, because money counts. You know, you need money to operate.
I guess Bernie Madoff is a good example of there is a such thing as bad publicity.
There is such thing as bad publicity. But the thing about American Jewish Congress was it was around since 1918 and became mostly known as a left-leaning Jewish organization fighting for causes, whether it's Israel or Jewish or the Jewish or the Jewish community. But over the years, it lost touch. It was so harped into its left-wing ideology that there were no longer followers who actually cared about it because Israel has changed, American Jewry has changed. So one of my jobs was to try to appeal to a younger, to a younger, more centrist audience on issues that they cared about. And we got involved with pushing for legislation for the Arrow Missile Project in Israel, which is the precursor to the Iron Dome right now that helped defend against rockets coming in. Things that are practical use and things that people really cared about these days, not just the old stuff that didn't really matter, that all applied in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s and days of civil rights when the same issues were no longer there. They had a hard time getting out of their civil rights mode into something real today.
Well, Les has not done any work with the self-defense of Israel. However, opera.
Opera and sumo wrestling.
Opera and sumo wrestling. Do you ever combine those?
I'd like to. Right now, an associate of mine, Mort Berkowitz and Les Schechter, have opened the Enrico Caruso Room in Grotta Azzurra restaurant on the corner of Mulberry and Broom Street. Grotta Azzurra is one of the oldest restaurants in Little Italy, opened in 1908, and it became a favorite of Enrico Caruso, the international tenor, when he was living in New York and singing at the Metropolitan Opera in probably from 1914 to 1923, I think, when he died. Anyhow, he used to come down to Little Italy because he felt comfortable here. He was born and raised in Naples, and most of the people on Mulberry Street in those days were first-generation immigrants from Naples. So he could speak the language, and he could eat the food that he was familiar with, but he also loved this room. And after performances at the Met, he would often come down with some friends. They would eat, and then he'd get up and sing. And it's also the place where he supposedly hit a high C, which cracked the glass. That we don't know.
You know, you mentioned Mulberry Street a lot in this restaurant, yes. But this show is heard all over the country.
Yes, all over the world.
Our friends in Indiana have no idea what Mulberry Street
Little
is.
Little Italy. It's the heart of Little Italy.
And why is it important?
He's
going to
teach you about PR, Les.
Little Italy is in the early 20th century, Italian immigrants came to New York City, and what they did is they settled on streets like Mulberry, Elizabeth, Baxter, and the people that came from local Italian cities all settled on the same streets because they would bring their neighbors and relatives over, and that's the way it became, you know, probably the world's famous Little Italy.
So we are sitting right now doing this show from a very important place in history.
That is correct.
Actually, it is an important place in history. You know what went on here, down the block, anyway, before they moved locations. This is where they rubbed out Crazy Joe Gallo. Did you have to rehab their image, Les?
The
Les, did you have to rehab their image after
no,
that?
No.
Well, Spark Steakhouse, you know. Who wants to eat there now?
No, that was John Gotti.
I'm good.
I'm good, too.
No, I've been representing Little Italy and Chinatown since 9/11, and I also do the Feast of San Gennaro, which is probably the
wonderful,
most
wonderful thing.
Kind of, well,
about
yeah.
it, about it. You know what? It's a bit better known than Shelley Silver's Jewish Fest on Lower East Side, but it's just
sure.
as good. Just as good.
That's for sure. But so anyhow, I know a lot of about this neighborhood, and I know a lot of people here. And it's very interesting. But anyhow, every
Leave
Tuesday,
it to a Jew to know everyone in Little Italy.
Absolutely.
Every Tuesday and Thursday, we
Don't
do
get
opera.
Lansky.
My people.
We do opera at Grotta Azzurra, the Enrico Caruso Room. So come on down. There's open mic opera on Thursday, and we have two wonderful singers every Tuesday.
Opera, that's music with a lot of killing, right?
Yes.
But I just want to throw one thing in. In 2005, I handled sumos. They did an international sumo
that would,
tour of the United States.
That would really fill your hands, wouldn't it?
They look like they're good tenors
That's
as well.
That's a handful, yeah.
Big guys, they could really belt it out.
Big guys. And they did, on a Saturday night, they did Madison Square Garden. And none of them came to New York until a week earlier, the weekend before. And
you took him out to eat.
Took him out to eat to the stage.
If you
deli.
Know sushi, like I know sushi.
Right, that's correct. And the best thing though was on. I said we need to do a weigh-in. Now you never do a weigh-in for sumos, but I figured, you know,
it's like the biggest
like
winner.
No. So we had to get a scale. We had to look all over the country, and we finally got
Western
a scale
beef.
From Indiana, which was a beef.
Again from Indiana, just like our friends from Indiana.
So now we know where the beef is.
Exactly.
It's in Indiana.
And all
you know, the weigh stations along the highway have scales like that, too.
That's you know right. where Prince Charles went on his honeymoon?
Tell me.
Indiana. Wife's name was Deanna.
I got it.
Okay.
But anyhow, on that...
I'm not sure I could really indulge that on the show.
Too late now.
On that Thursday... There were probably 5,000 tickets sold for the garden. But when we did the weigh-in on that Thursday morning, I arranged, they were all staying in the hotel, Pennsylvania, across the street. I arranged for them to cross 7th Avenue in a single line, wearing their
blotting out
diapers.
The sun.
You see, that is what we call street theater and public
right.
relations.
That is correct.
I
love
like
it.
That kind
love
of
it.
Stuff.
Love it, love it, love
and,
it.
And I got the idea from the Beatles, Crossing Abbey Road. The first album had that crossing.
I can so learn something from you.
Okay. We're going to adjourn to the bar for more drinking
Wait,
and learning. But first
to...
we have to go.
No, we crossed them over. The picture went all over the world.
Less and, is known worldwide. How did you look in your diaper, by the way?
I didn't wear it.
Okay. He was without his diaper.
That looked even better.
Publicity.
That looked even better.
All right. We'll be back next week with more stuff. But for now, we're gone.
When it comes to providing guide dogs for people who are blind or visually impaired, one national organization is taking the lead. The Guide Dog Foundation breeds and trains Labradors and Golden Retrievers to help blind and visually impaired people increase their mobility and independence. The foundation provides transportation to its New York campus, the guide dog, a comprehensive training program, and a lifetime of aftercare services, all free of charge. The benefits to training with a guide dog at the Guide Dog Foundation in Smithtown, New York are many. Among them are small class sizes for personalized attention, a long history of excellence in dog breeding, and a highly skilled professional training staff. The foundation offers a comfortable environment and diverse training areas from country walks to city subways. If you or someone you know could benefit from the foundation's free services, call 800-548-4337.